Winner of the 2018 American Book Award for his powerful debut collection of poetry entitled Currents, Bojan Lewis is a Navajo writer who's incorporated his past as an electrician with his recent life as a teacher, editor, and writing fellow who's traveled the world from Asia to Spain and back to his home state of Arizona, all the while looking for language to tell his stories.
Writing this book was also an opportunity to engage with Spanish and Diné. I mean, I think on the page, I don't think very well out loud. Like, very careful about what I'm trying to say, and of course that's why I love writing, because you can sit there and shape it however you want. You can make it mean three or four things.
Explore the complexities of cultural histories with the poet Bojan Lewis today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam, and we talked at Haskell Indian Nations University during their 2018 Summer Bridge program for students who gathered to hear him at the Taubman Library on their campus in Lawrence, Kansas. His collection, Currents, had just been released by UMKC's Bookmark Press, so it hadn't yet won the American Book Award. Raised hearing rather than speaking the Navajo language, Diné, here's Bojan Lewis with some insight into one of his poems.
This was like my first experiment of how would I rhyme English and Diné? If you can, how would you like create a rhythm with these languages that have different tonal qualities? Some of it worked, and some of it was just like, how would you phrase this complicated sentence? Of course, that's written with an English sensibility and an English mindset when Diné is completely different. They're like experiments. So this is Huelde, which was the Navajo Long Walk, which is the place they went, Fort Sumner, Bosque Redondo. It can translate as hardship or place of suffering. Ak'e takes the last ina. Ats is crumpled on Nahastan. Dinepakagi wants off its atsin. Gather di belito beidlo pika. Lee flinch lubaha. Natzido dontla nanje adilel. With corpses. Dambi ije badi ina.
Huelde. That's from the book Currents by Bojan Lewis. And this is New Letters on the Air at Haskell Indian Nations University. It's so good to be here. And Bojan, it's good to see you again, because we were here together when you were on the panel talking about The World as One Place, the anthology right. about Native Americans in the Middle East and poetry that had to do with that. So that was wonderful. And one of your poems was featured in New Letters Magazine, which you read for
Correct.
Us.
Yeah.
And now we have your first full book, Currents.
Right.
Let's have you talk a little bit about yourself, because you have worked as a construction worker and an electrician, but then you went and got your MFA, and I just assumed it was in poetry, but it wasn't.
I got my MFA in fiction from Arizona State.
Well, how in the world did we end up with your first book being a book of poetry?
When I had initially applied to the Arizona State program, I had written a manuscript of poetry. And I was living in Alaska, in Sitka, framing houses, and was slowly realizing that I was getting tired of that, and I needed to find a different option for myself. So I ditched the poetry manuscript because I was reading a lot of Dennis Johnson poems, and I felt like I was ripping him off. So I got rid of it, and I've always read more fiction than poetry, I think. I really enjoy poetry, but my default, I guess, genre is fiction. Like, I devour fiction, and then sometimes it'll take me a month to get through a book of poems for whatever reason. So I just found myself writing stories at that point, and then got into the program at ASU.
Well, I noticed that one of the people who wrote a blurb for your book was Stuart Dybeck, who I think of as being one of the master short story writers in our culture. And I was wondering, did you study with him?
Well, I studied with him in 2008, so midway between the three-year program. I got accepted to the Prague Summer Program. Luckily, one of my friends applied too, and he told the faculty at ASU, and they were like, oh, well, we'll give you money to go. So they gave us a bunch of money, and I got to study with Stuart, who really encouraged me with my fiction. And we got along because we both like a lot of music. So we talked a lot about music. And I just have stayed in touch with him ever since. And I always send him anything I finish. Early on, I sent him my poems because he was always like, you need to stop screwing around and finish your fiction. He still says that. And he said, yeah, this is good.
Well, he said a little more than it's good. I've got to read this. It takes only the ring of the opening poems and currents to realize this book does exactly what one hopes a first book will do, bring alive a new original voice. It's a voice Bojan Lewis not only sustains but builds the way, say, a young Sonny Rollins might shape and vary a singular solo that flows through song after song, raw, kinetic, authentic, a poetry in which language has in common with music, the visceral feel of the breathing body behind it. That's a wonderful, wonderful tribute. I mean, I was blown away by that. Well, the book opens in Sitka, Alaska. And so I was curious, was that one of the original poems that you put aside, or is it something that you came back to later? Or
it was one of the later poems that I wrote. I think the first poem I wrote was Red Dirt. And then what really made me think I had a collection was a poem, Currents, and it's in threes. There's a lot of threes happening, stanzas and sections, tercets, syllabics. And so then I was like, I thought like a fiction person, like I should have mirrors of three, like a trilogy. So instead of reading poems, I went and read all these trilogies in fiction. And, you know, they take place in different parts of people's lives, different continents, different cities. And so that's what sort of led me to make these three poems resonate together. So they're like sort of sub-chapters in this book. But I wrote that poem later, and I mean, I worked on this thing for like 8 years because I like poetry and I've never formally studied it, so I didn't know how to put a poetry collection together. And I think that's a large part of the MFA experience, is learning how to collect these things. So yeah, I was just screwing around. I wrote stacks and stacks of poems, which I ended up throwing away, and these are the ones that ultimately survived.
Red Dirt is a very short poem, and then Currents is in three parts, kind of in the center of the book, right. And they're both back-to-back. How about we have you read those?
Okay. Red Dirt. I work to be more than roots, fed through days of heat and dust, evaporating into a brittle husk, withdrawn and left as only remains. Whether stirred out by force or removed in mechanic iron swoops, I'm simple, passed over and dumped onto a pile of old ground, turned up, open to the air. Bound in earth pack, I release seeds, my blood to be windblown and spread. Straining from new foundation, I reach to hold all else, settled, empty of breath.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
Red Dirt. That's the earliest poem from Bojan Lewis's collection, Currents. This is New Letters on the Air, and we're at Haskell Indian Nations University. And let's hear the longer poem so we could contrast those two. It comes next in the book. And it takes us to where you live now, Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah. So this book, I mean, there's nothing chronological about it or sequential. It's sort of like chaos. It just sort of happens all at once. Currents. Each new sun asks, be no thing more than me. Have nothing beyond need. Sun opened your whole being, lifted face, arms spread. The only part of me is blessed, a body exerted after long hours, responsibility, and the need to ease tremors. The last of March's welfare won't go past the 18th. Hunger pains dulled month to month. We've burned the final log from February's half cord. Sun's school books claimed lost are enough to get the fire going. My youth wasn't warm enough to stone prairie dogs, skin, and eat. The drive past the flats no longer makes instant noodles cheaper. Morning's blind when throats throw heat. Stutter steps skid linoleum, untouched eggs feed me, forget me. Mom's a woman with red skin and long receipts, an aluminum facade of sparkle talk and sheen, measuring steps, easy win, sudden guess, sissy boys tear, and candy don't take care. There isn't a nickel in any cushion. Skeletal hair remains collect all over. Red drips redder than my skin, redder than swallowed embarrassment, than slap, freezing feet. A dark hall's corner, a damask of lines. The call to mom uses, telling me I don't add up. I penguin walk and cross feet. In grass, I pull my knees up. Still, the grass grows toward me. The coin fare for a crosstown bus, a rosary for time on my own. Slow approach on the upcoming stop, a heavy let, a stiffened step. On concrete, right-angled silhouettes, the butane flame dawn. The water's hot, and there is light. The home encloses a sun lost until 6:30 brings noise of traffic delays and brewing. I get little out of this. Pay is ungrateful. I eat little. My eyes bulge. I don't know the woman letting time slip.
That was Currents, the title poem of the book by Bojan Lewis from Bookmark Press. And this is New Letters on the Air, and we're happy to be here with some folks at Haskell Indian Nations University. You know, your mom makes an appearance in this.
Mom makes an appearance.
Okay, not necessarily your mom. That's right, because poetry, you can have the person is not necessarily the poet talking about.
Right.
Things.
It's many mothers as one mother.
But you dedicate the book to your mom.
Yeah.
Or one of the people that you dedicate it to. So tell us a little bit about your background. You were born in Arizona.
I was actually born in Gallup, New Mexico.
Really?
Well, there was no hospital in Window Rock, so that was the closest.
Oh, so you had to cross the border.
Yeah,
right.
My mom did. I was like premature, barely 5 pounds. I guess I lived in an incubator for a while, like a chicken, maybe.
How long do you know?
I think 2 months or something.
Wow.
But when I finally hatched, they took me back to Window Rock, and we lived there until I was 6. And then my sister was born 2 years after I was. We moved to Flagstaff, where I pretty much grew up, and I got my undergrad degree at Northern Arizona University and studied with all the writers there. Jim Zimmerman, in particular, who Red Dirt is dedicated to. And he sort of pushed me. I don't know what you want to do with your life, but you should probably get an MFA.
So did you stumble into poetry and writing fiction, or is it something you did when you were young?
I have a very different recollection of my childhood than my parents do. They think I read and wrote all the time, but I only did for assignments for class because we could draw if we wrote a story. So like the sooner I got the reading out of the way, I could do something else.
So when did you start writing?
High school, I think. I was also very troublesome at that point. For some reason, I figured out that I only needed 2 classes to graduate. I didn't have to take the full 4-course block. And I was already 18 by that point. So that benefited me. I had a job with Pepsi, so I'd start work at 4 in the morning and go stock the stores and then go to my 1 class. And I wouldn't even go. I would go and say hi to my teacher, and then I would leave and go to the coffee shop to read, actually. That's when I started reading. So I'd go and read at the coffee shop or write stories, and that's what I would turn into her, were book reviews and whatever I was working on. So I think, so I wouldn't fail, she let me do that. I took that class, and then I took an independent study with the math teacher who was from Boston. There's like a really devout Catholic dude, but really into philosophy. So I would read all these books on philosophy, and we'd meet after school. And it was like my philosophy course with him and another friend of mine. So that's how I got into reading and writing. And it just sort of, I think, took its own force from there. So then when I went into college, I just took any English class that I could. I took linguistics because I didn't really know what linguistics was. And dropped it because I was like, yeah, I don't want to do this. I took grammar, you know. But then I really got attached to the literature courses and the creative writing courses. That's, I think, where I excelled, and everything else I sort of got to see the pass.
That's interesting. I'm always intrigued by how people get hooked on writing or reading or whatever process, and it sounds like it came to you a little later than, you know, you do hear stories about people who, as soon as they can pick up a pen or pencil, they start using it. So
that was not me.
That was not me.
No.
So you mentioned linguistics, which actually you are interested in when you start thinking about the fact that you are trying to get better and better in Spanish, right? Obviously, you're fluent in English, and then you have the Diné, which is a beautiful language.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tonal. I mean, yeah, I think it's a great language. And I've been slacking on my Navajo lessons as of late.
When you say your Navajo lessons, is it mostly with your family?
It's an opportunity for me to interact in Diné with my parents and relatives more, because they're all fluent. But, you know, they didn't teach us to be fluent because of their experiences in boarding school. So, you know, I asked them, how would you say these phrases? And their response is often, you would never say that in Navajo. Why would you say that? Like, it's a weird phrasing. So then they would figure out, well, how would you create that image? And it's like, you know, all these family members arguing about phrasing. You know, they live in a different city. And it's hard to do on the phone or over Skype. So I have a few language books that I use. So, you know, I'm also trying to write it. And the spellings have changed over the years. And my parents don't read it. So I'll write it down and they'll be like, what is
really?
That?
Really? They speak it, say? But they don't read it.
Well, it was never a written language until World War II. So, of course, they speak it. But there's no, like, textbooks in Navajo. I mean, there's textbooks of the Navajo language, but you can't pick up a novel in Navajo. Yet. There's some Diné people working on that. So, I mean, you know, it's all these enclitics and weird symbols and like, how do you know when to make a or a or a g? So they just look at it like, then they'll get close and then I'll say it and then they'll say like, oh, you mean this? And then they'll say it and it looks close enough. They also speak different dialects. They have different phrasings and sort of accents. My dad's from Crystal, which is on the east side, and my mom's from Coal Mine Mesa, which is on the west side. They argue all the time about how to say things.
Yeah.
So learning it sometimes is, it ends up just me watching them sort of argue about a phrase. And then I just go and do something else.
Well, I noticed another person who blurbed this book was Sherwin Bitsui. And I had a wonderful conversation with him a while back that if any of you are curious about, you can go to our website and listen to. He's Diné. He talked a lot in that interview about the language and the phrasing, and it was really interesting. Do you guys know each other?
Oh, yeah. He was crucial in helping also with, you know, like fact-checking the Diné, because he would be like, well, what do you mean by this? What kind of blanket are you talking about? And, you know, I'd say, I think this, in my understanding. And he's fluent. So he's always like, you got to get out of that English brain. You're thinking like an English speaker. Mm-hmm. When I'm asking him, like, you know, what does this participle mean? He's like, you got to get out of that mindset. It's been hard for me. So, I mean, he helps to clarify.
Yeah, he's a wonderful poet. Okay, this part is kind of heavy because it's got a lot of history connected to it. And you do a wonderful job in your notes of talking about it. And the poem's a little bit long, but I think it's worth hearing hydrolysis.
Oh, yeah.
You really are tackling some subject matter in here that's intense. So I thought maybe that I might read your notes and then...
You can read the notes and I'll read the poem.
Coal Mine Mesa, Navajo Nation. Number one, as of 2015, 32% of all homes on the Navajo Nation lack electricity, 31% lack plumbing, 38% lack water services, 86% lack natural gas, and 60% lack telephone services. There are more than 1,200 abandoned mines on Diné Bikya, emitting gamma rays, poisoning soil, air, earth, and water sources. War is profit. War is fear. War is contamination. War is white and yellow cake.
Hydrolysis. Tahunt worked down, her dad slurred, as consistently as the days his unemployment was condoned. No mail delivery or landline she hitched any time the neighbor's wagon passed. Funny, in the 50s, most of the country drove. had buses stopping at the long end of dirt ruts. Wouldn't have mattered. Liver failure, dysentery would keep him at home. Before ever playing with books and paper, my mother swung axes, kindling priority over that of her hearts. The hope for supper and frosted dune dawns indebted the family to wood. She and her siblings stole what made stars burn from gas cans at the trading post and huffed that shit into their lungs. It's neat to scissor perforated outlines so that the cut keeps. Feathered edges thirst for moisture, dissolve, and warble like voices nixing sleep. Somnambulant sons and daughters cleaved from the everyday bonding of their parents. It's not them who alter, it's you.
Number two. The Indian Student Placement Program, originally called the Lamanite Student Placement Program, spanned from 1947 to 2000 with an estimated 40,000 participants from 60 tribes across the United States and Canada. Mormon mythology puts forth a narrative that suggests America's indigenous people fled Israel in 600 BC and settled into two groups, the Nephites, righteous and civilized, the Lamanites, savage and bloodthirsty, with hardened hearts, cursed by God with dark skin that made them loathsome. The Mormon Church considers it a sacred obligation to convert and redeem indigenous peoples, for we are, quote, chosen. For what is a soul but the idea of your eternal being beyond, perhaps, heaven and earth? As with any oppressive system of assimilation, a divide, a bipolarity was created. Those skinned of or having shed their indigenous traditions and roots for white culture and Mormon mythology, and those who seek reclamation, return.
It's knock up when solar hues dampen the trek home's frost after a desperate and smitten beau, whose bed is already shared by a sibling, swears palm to chest that his groin is sated. No longer a trope of want or population, but a tropic above the equator where one heat is necessary, one heat is good. Handouts by diapers hardly ever, do food sometimes. A belly stretch marked and loose after a body's exit is again a plaster's hawk, a temporary hold before a more permanent smearing. Lead pate bleeding into asbestos, crumbling to flake and dust, an interlock of detritus, dead weeds blown against volcanic rock, birth to birth all this. Off the uranium wind reservation, on Utah farms and in cities, God comes easy, a touching that's domestic, the fault of being language naughty, our sun darkened pretty, simple as thighs like chicken skin, pussy wet like dog nose, a truth that is contraband distributed on the home front, where the more you lose yourself, the less is asked of you.
Number three.
Nayet Nizgani.
Slayer of alien gods.
Tobajeshchini.
Born for water. The hero twins are the sons of
Azja Nadlehe.
Changing woman. And
Johanna'i.
The sun. They journeyed to destroy the foreign gods and monsters, killing our people sometime after the emergence from the third world into the fourth world. Cedar can be burned and used to cleanse one's being of needy spirits after a burial or death occurs. It can be used in prayer.
It's better if monsters are vanquished with our stories, done in by hero twins, Nayen Ezgani, the Tobajeshchini. Mom's words. Labyrinths aren't nature's making. Humans obsessed over harnessing a pattern, placing dead ends, calling walls art. Whether trimmed hedge or bonded by mortar, both, anything really, began in water. And it keeps us. And it keeps us. Despite my traditional knowing, there's no other being I'll see in the poorly stained cedar cabinet willed to me. A Greek he-monster, myth trim, and fit with afflictions of earth, moss beard, stump horns, hoof foot, and lichen plaque, not an ideal. More a reject that science or the Pope will heal. It's not a matter of what I see. After a burial, the unstained cedar can be burned. Time in any circumstance disfigures. Basically, don't be bothered by what you can't know. Keep at that bucolic dream, the one where money is no problem but something else is, like sky without bird, gust with no pollen, or season with one temperature. A place where wind never quits, just blows some other way.
Hydrolysis, from the book Currents. This is New Letters on the Air at Haskell Indian Nations University. You deal with a lot of issues in this book. Sexual abuse, alcoholism.
It's all stuff that happens on and off the reservation and in border towns and with colonization and feeling outside and inside your own culture and your people, like especially with language. Like I struggle with the Navajo parts and, you know, there's two reactions to that is like, cool, you're trying, or what's wrong with you? You know? And that's just the man doing his work. I think when it finally all started coming together, I wanted to create in a condensed form because I was really focusing on concision with a lot of these and constraining myself to certain syllabic counts because a lot of it is based in being an electrician. So really it's from the point of view of an electrician who's just looking at a service panel, right? So there's a lot of tercets, there's a lot of threes, there's a lot of sixes, there's a lot of like nines and 13s. And so when I constrained myself, I had to condense all the meaning into like these deep images and references and plays of language that, of course, I know, but like how do I give it to everyone else?
It's interesting. You know, when I was first reading this, I was thinking of currents that flow through and how there are so many things happening on top of each other. But it's really fun to know that it also has to do with electrical currents. I hadn't really thought about that connection to it, too.
Yeah, for me, that's what holds it all together is a basic circuit is a ground, a neutral, and a hot. An alternating current never stops. It just goes back and forth. So there is an absence between the two phases. And so trying to access, you know, theoretically and poetically, that absence. What is that space where there's nothing happening, but there's something happening between two phases? But if those phases ever meld together, it just blows up, right? That's why you get explosions and houses burn down. I've been an electrician for like 15 years. So
it's a long time.
A lot of thinking about wires and lights.
Well, it's a beautiful book. Should we end with a poem?
Sure. I can read this electricity poem.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah. Electricity. The morning roundup's a current leaking to earth without interruption or fault. Above busted streetlights, the sun buzzes to a cuffed line of deportees, the sheriff's imbalanced authority. Any laborer gathered for a tear out agrees the pleasure of opening walls is the view of what's no longer behind. The restrained motion of a body caught within a fence run between language is a union of shock and memory. Thank you.
Electricity from Currents, the 2018 American Book Award winner, published by Bookmark Press. Earlier that year, we recorded Bojan Lewis at Haskell Indian Nations University Library. A former editor of Arizona State's Red Ink Journal, he left in 2019 to teach at the University of Arizona. For links to his book, our show, and the Support New Letters button, visit newletters.org. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. From UMKC's New Letters Magazine, thanks for today's show goes to Danny Reeves, Dylan Cramhorn, Ashley Cote, Cassie Vaughn, Evan Lohman, and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.